Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the press conference of the film Licht, film in the official section of the 65th edition of the San Sebastian Film Festival. And we have a lot of the cast and crew to answer your questions. Let me introduce you to the people who are on the panel. Michael Kitzberger, the producer. Catherine Resetaritz, who's a screenplay writer. The actors, Maria Dragos, Lucas Mico, and Katia Kolm. The producer, Martire Olmritz, and the director, Barbara Albert. As usual, and before asking a question, perhaps it'd be good that Barbara perhaps could tell us why are you interested in Maria Teresa Bonparadis? So what interested you in her story?
Okay, so I tried to make it short, although it was quite a long time of development. I read the novel written by Alisa Walser, Mesmerized, and I was really thrilled by the characters of Maria Theresia Paradis and Franz Anton Mesmer. Those two characters, different but at the same time both gifted and extraordinary characters that really interested me, but more than Mesmer even, I was interested in this woman, this blind Maria Theresia Paradis, who actually, even a street is named after her in Vienna, but we don't really know her story. Even in Vienna, in Austria, we don't know her story. So I was really interested in putting her story into the light, or bringing her into the light, and telling this character interpreted by Maria, who is so ambivalent, who is not only this suffering woman, but a very strong, maybe sometimes even courageous woman, who shows us, I think, how she becomes a subject from beginning, an object in the beginning. Okay, I don't know. I try to put everything in this one sentence. So I would love to hear questions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would like to know, I think you don't know the answer for what you just said, but I just want to try. Do we know what made the main character not be able to see when she was three?
We went through really a lot of researches. We met doctors, psychoanalysts, even children's psychotherapists. There are different possibilities. I believe that there was a traumatic moment in her life that made her stop seeing, there's this word I miss. Okay, so for instance, young people who get anorectic, they have the same. You split your personality splits, and she just says no. Maybe she reacts with saying no, I don't see anymore. She closes her eyes. Yeah. But of course, one doctor told us maybe it was also a physical thing. But for me, it was much more interesting to go for this other story, which is a possibility. Of course, you can ask, what happened? Was the father raping her? What was there sexual abuse or whatever? This would have been too obvious for me. I didn't want to speculate, because we don't know. But the fact that this is possible really interested me, and that you can react physically on something like a trauma, whatever happened. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Hi. Okay, what information did you analyze? What did you research and investigate vis-a-vis Dr. Mesmer, who I believe is a character who is fascinating, and I'm not too sure whether... What documentation or investigation, what documents did you find vis-a-vis this character who is fascinating, that is to say, the doctor, Dr. Mesmer?
Magst du mal ein bisschen antworten? Du, ja, oder, I think because Katrin, who wrote the screenplay, she was even much more deeper in the researches than me, so maybe she can answer.
He wrote himself. He wrote a little book where he tried, it was a time of enlightenment, and he tried to be a scientist. So he wrote a little book where he tried to make a fundament for his theories, a scientific fundament. And he also described his private clinic in his house in Mesmer, Palais Mesmer, and he described the case of Maria Theresia Paradis. And this is very important, I think. This was the main, well, one of the main sources of information, because it was it was his view, his perspective on the case. And then there are also some letters and an article in the newspaper of the time of the father of Maria Theresia Paradis, who also, is always also describing Franz Anton Mesmer. And at that time, he was very happy that his daughter got all this, was a virtuous. He also got money from it. He got money from the Empress, a Gnadenpension. Not a lot of people got that. And he was very happy at first when she got so much attention during the curing process. Then in the end, he was not so happy anymore, and he was talking differently about Mesmer. And then there are other people writing about Mesmer, but those, for me, were quite important, those two sources.
Sí, perdón, no, un añadido solo. Es que
just add something. In the film, what drew my attention is that it talks about Mademoiselle Paradis, but I wanted to know more about the doctor. That's, and I don't know whether you in the script you had the temptation of telling more about the doctor or to just focus on Maria Theresa Paradis. Did you feel like including more information about Dr. Mesmer in the script? Did you run it? Was that a temptation for you?
To be honest, I think when you do an adaptation, you always have to find a new inner topic, an inner heart. And this topic for me was about the worth of people, you know?
The value of people.
Yeah. Somebody, also enlightenment, it changed, achievement got more important. And Maria Theresia Paradis, for me, was very important if she was like a center for a lot of different characters who all have an aspect of this topic, because she said one sentence once, and it's in two sources, you can read it, if she said it really, it's not so important, but that touched me very much. She said, when she was doubting about if she really wants to see again, because seeing naturally made her for a time less virtuous, because her brain tried to get new informations, and she was very afraid to lose her ability on the piano. And she said, I'd rather be a famous virtuous than an infamous normal person who can see. So this touched me very much, because she thought she's nothing worth when she can't do something special. And in a certain way, also the other figures, like this little handicapped boy or the Zwölferin, which says, I think God doesn't love you for your achievements. And Maria Theresa Paradis says, for what else? And also Mesmer, who wants to be somebody, who wants to be on a university, who wants to be a great doctor, who wants to be a scientist. All those people have an aspect of that. But Mesmer wasn't so important. It wasn't the main figure for me. For me, it was an aspect of the topic, for my topic. But I wasn't so interested in this kind of story of the great healer and the sage, the wise man who touches the little girl, and then she suddenly is healed and all this wasn't so interesting for me.
And then we have to say there are other films and also literature that deals really with this aspect. So we wanted to get to another aspect, a new aspect. There is one word I found somewhere here. It's dissociative disruption. This is what the psychoanalysts here now understand maybe better. So this is dividing your two personalities because of a traumatic moment.
It's me again. I wanted to know, how is it to both direct and portray a person who is blind or who is changing between seen and not seen? That it looks believable and that looks really hard to achieve.
Yeah, do you want to answer this, maybe? Is it a question
also for the direct and portray, so both?
I start and then you continue. In the very beginning, because I always want to be very authentic, and I really would have loved to work with blind women, and we even met blind women, also with my casting director, and it was really great to work with them. But we had to find out, of course, that it's embarrassing to think that blind people can act like a seeing person. So there is one border you cannot get over. So then we knew, okay, we have to find a very good actress. And we found her, and I'm very happy about that. So maybe you can talk about how was your approach towards this character?
Hi, actually, what was interesting for me is that Barbara had a very specific vision of how the character should look like. So she was like, you know, I want you to move your eyes in a certain way, which I didn't feel quite comfortable doing at first, because I was like, oh God, so is this not gonna look ridiculous, you know? What if people are gonna say, or, you know, the like. But the thing is, once we started working on it, I felt like, okay, this is different, so let's just go with the flow and try to like find a very different approach to this character. And I met a lot of blind women, and I tried to see how they work and how they, you know, move their bodies and like move their eyes and stuff. And then, you know, on set I had contact lenses, really big contact lenses, so they kind of made it very hard for me to see as well. So I kind of had a glimpse of how this must feel like to people who are actually blind. And of course, I mean, I trust Barbara 100%, so it was really nice to just like let myself fall into this character and just be her, you know. It was just an amazing experience for me.
And this losing control of your body, it's very difficult for a dancer and actress like you, and that was the very first thing we talked about, that this blind Rezi, she doesn't have any control of her body, of course not, because she doesn't know how she looks, and it's not her thing to think about this aspect. So this was the first approach. And then you also worked with dark glasses to really feel like a blind person.
Yeah, so to give you like, so basically, you know, I think working is maybe 90% the preparation, and then 10% is what you actually do on set, because you have very little time, and sometimes you're pressured, and then you have to like achieve a certain moment very fast. So I tried to get as much information as possible, and I had a lot of time. Actually, this is the first project that I knew of since like 2 years before we started shooting, so I had time to like get into the subject, read about the character, and then meet people eventually and do the field work, you know. And I had like two very amazing blind women whom I've met. One is 100% blind, and the other one could see, still can see like 3% on one eye. And at first, you know, you meet them in the studio. For me, it was very important to go through different scenes from the script and like work with them a little bit to see how, for example, they dance. I taught her how to dance, and she like, you know, so I could see what it would look like if somebody who actually can't see would dance. And then she took me on her daily you know, like work life, and she helped me go through the streets. I was wearing glasses, couldn't see, and stuff like that. So basically, I just tried to like get as much of the feeling into my body as possible. So yeah, long answer, sorry. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, congratulations for this film with many layers and levels. As you all together have done a film which is, in a way, universal, as you pointed out, but it is as well a costume, a period film, a period drama. And I think each period has its own way to think, its own movements, its own feelings, and its own illnesses, of course. So I'd like to know from all the four actors, was it easy, was it very difficult, and which kind of difficulties to adapt to this time? Did you have to learn to move different, maybe to speak, of course, to speak different? It's an old-fashioned language in a way, sometimes. So, what was the challenge?
Okay, hi. Well, I was very much interested in the status game, how status was defined in that time by, yeah, money, that the people have a good opinion from you, by your costumes, and that you are enormously put under pressure. And we have in Austria this funny expression, bicycle technique. So you make a bow towards the people above you, and you kick the people underneath you. And if you're always put under pressure, of course you have to give the pressure to others. And as a father, the real father I played, he started his career in Romania somewhere where it was awful, and he was always sick and had fever, and he was very happy getting back to Vienna. And of course he wanted to make career through the talent of his daughter. And then you're under pressure in one hand that you want to protect your daughter, but on the other hand you have to gain your status, and you have to put pressure on your daughter and get results from her. And somehow, of course, each time has each period has its own rules, but in a way, they sounded very familiar to our days, and we are also defined in our status is defined in a similar way, and of course, we had teachers, dancing teachers, which taught us how to walk, and the costume make a great deal. You cannot move differently in a way. You're not relaxed. And yeah, maybe you want to say something also? Lovely mother.
We really think. Yes, I mean, always when you as an actor get such a theme that you play in another time, you have to make a decision. So what is now important really to prepare? And I also really trusted on the costumes. It's just perfect that you get straight up. But also I tried to make it also a little bit modern. So to take the sentence is easy because the audience is modern and not of this time. So as a woman, you always feel the big difference how the women are treated. And sometimes there were moments when I wanted to make more to be for my child or to be more with more strength. She told me, no, that's not the time. So it's we work together, and yes.
I just want to say thank you also to Katharina Resetaritz, but she did a wonderful work with the dialogue, and the dialogues were very funny and witty and sharp, and you felt all that what I told before, the status game, and how people fight in a very delicate way, and we owe a lot to Katharina
also
as well.
Also, when you have a structure of a movie, you know, sometimes you have to like work for the movie to get good, to get a good film, you know. But this one, it was different because everybody had a very clear understanding of what it should look like. And then you get a really good script, as Lucas was just saying, and you have amazing dialogue and you don't have to change anything and you're there, great. I just have to say the words, which makes our jobs a lot easier, you know, especially because you don't have any kind of material, video or photos or whatever from that time. So you're like, you read stuff and you try to get into the mindset, but you never really achieve a one-to-one picture. And it shouldn't be that, you know, in the end it's a movie and it's made to, for people to be entertained and be, you know, try to maybe think about different subjects because it's, as you said, not a one-layer film. It has a lot of layers, so yeah.
And I would like to add, because maybe I'm not so good in trusting everyone, I have to control everything, so I met an historian also to ask him, and he was really deep into the 18th century. He read like tons of writings that were done during court, Gerichtsverhandlungen, court, during the, in the courtroom with young women who were sentenced to death because of killing their children, and of course because they were not married and got pregnant, and he was very deep into this period, and he read the script and he said, "Wow, it's so great because I have the feeling it's a modern dialogue, but I believe the dialogue," which is so difficult, and he was really impressed because he said at the time you would talk so in so long sentences because everyone you approach to everyone you have to address with all the titles they have and then they would talk Latin and you know and French and Hungarian and whatever but he was really impressed and this was really most important for us I think and really Katrin found this language in the dialogue that we on set we as you say we didn't have to change it was so true in a way. And thanks to the makeup artists and costume designers, because they are also in the room, thank you very much. they built the characters together with us. This was really very, very important preparation time and a very, very long, very fruitful and intense time to work on the characters.
I want to add one more thing, because I was very fond of her script, and I had the impression that a certain mentality, Viennese mentality maybe, of putting people down, or the lust of putting people down is to us quite familiar. Mm. And there is a joke maybe that sums it up very nice. It's there is a very nice, very good talented painter in Paris, and he makes a painting. There comes another painter and his little cellos and makes an even more beautiful painting. And there is another painter in Austria, and he paints a very beautiful painting, and there comes another painter, Austrian painter, and sees the painting and is very jealous and burns it. So in Paris you have two paintings at the end, and in Austria none. So somehow this is familiar to us. It's not
That's
only like that in
that
Vienna.
Is a really good joke.
I love
Thank
Vienna
you.
Too, but it's a little side.
I'm gonna pass it on. I'm gonna pass this joke on. It was really good. Thank you.
Yes. Now, hi. Could you talk about the artistic design, the creation of the doctor's house? Is that based merely on documentation, or have you sought the painted wallpaper and the frescoes that you see, so that you can see those beautiful images that you see in the film? How was that sought after?
Yeah, the production designer from the very beginning thought that this how Raisi feels like in this palais, in this Mesmer's house, should get a special room or special building, like she wanted to build a labyrinth, but we realized that it's so difficult because at that time the houses were really very straight. I mean, there were only these, you know, you had the saloons, you had the one room after the other, and there was not really a possibility to hide or to build this labyrinth. And so we thought, okay, then let's go for something else. And we found this, we found this jungle as a symbol for this, you know, for the inner world of Frazee. And at the time, of course, these wallpapers, they exist. So what we did was we took some of these walls that still exists in Vienna and around Vienna and put them together and found a painter who painted them for us. And so we rebuilt this one room as we wanted to have it, like this symbol for the inner world of Frazee, yes. I think it's like it's her also the this you know when she starts to, I mean she's so aufgewühlt, das heißt das aufgewühlt. She's so upset or troubled, or she's when she start and her music. This all together, this comes all together when she's in this room with this jungle. This is like the room that that stands for this wild, also this wild soul, which she cannot really live. She's not allowed to live her inner soul or her inner also music and senses.
Yeah. Hi. A question for Maria and for Lucas, both of you who have worked with Haneke, and I would like to know whether you've shared impressions or whether they've helped you in one way or another in order to portray your role or in your careers, whether you've exchanged points of view.
Actually, we're three here who worked with Haneke. Katarina also works with Haneke very frequently, actually. Do you want to answer first?
It's a difficult question.
We did actually share, of course. You talk, when two Haneke actors meet, they talk about Haneke, of course, but everybody does, so then again, it's not something very special. Haneke helped me so much, you know, like, he is an amazing director, and I worked with him in a very, very early stage of my acting. And I feel very, very grateful that I could, because Mr. Haneke is just an amazing director in a way that I understand my acting now. You know, he's very precise and very detailed, and he's very much all about preparation as well. So I learned a lot from him and from the way he works and the people around him who work with him, because it's, you know, filmmaking is teamwork. So I kept that from working with him, definitely. And of course it helped me in wherever I go, whatever I do, because people associate my work with the White Ribbon. So, you know, once you have this kind of a stamp, you don't want to get rid of it.
Well, I have more or less the same opinion or impression from Michael Haneke. I was very thankful because I was very young. It was in 1993. I was 22 years old and even still in acting school. So it was an amazing opportunity to work with such a great director. In that time, he wasn't that famous as he became afterwards, but as a young actor, you felt immediately that he is, the way he writes his scripts, they are so precise. Like there's a famous Austrian writer, Bavarian, Öden von Horváth, and when he writes like music, like pause and silence, it's so precise that you really have a safety net as an actor, and you know that you can't be you can't do bad acting while working with him. And of course he told me a lot about important directors like Robert Bresson and so on, and it was for me a big start into the world of cinema. So yeah, but it's a long, long time ago.
Any further questions? We've got time for one last question.
If you want to hear more about music, I just want to say that Sonia Leipold is also here. She played the piano for us, and I'm really grateful. So because we didn't talk about the music, which we sometimes forget, but maybe you have a question for that, or you can, because she's a musician, you can ask her. No.
Sí.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask about that. I just forgot with everything else. I wanted to know if, well, now I know it's not you actually playing, I imagine so. It looks really hot. But do you know anything at all about piano, or it was all play pretend?
What is a piano? yeah, I mean, my father is a cellist for his profession, so I grew up around people who play music, and in my house there's always music, so yes, I do know how to play the piano a little bit. I know how to fake it very well.
Sí, sí, hay.
Yes.
¿Qué periodo pudo ver la María Teresa?
Was Maria Teresa, how long was that period of time that she was there? How long could she see? How long was the period of time? Because that wasn't too clear in the film. At least that's what the person who asked the question, she said, that's what I didn't pick up in the film.
She started, I hope that I don't mess up, but I can't mess up so much because it was less than a year. It was 1777, and I think it was from January or February to July, so it was a short period, and it was also a short period where there happened quite a lot of things, but then after this period she came back to her parents, so she was taken from Mesmer, came to her parents, and it's not clear how long it took that she was blind totally again. It's also, I mean, nobody of us can know what's true. I mean, we don't do a film about real things. It's a fiction. I mean, but I think from all the sources that it's quite probable that she really could see twice for a short time in this period.
And she started composing after that. And I mean, what we know is that, like, the very first fantasie that you hear in the film, this is her own music, but she wrote it when she was older. But she was already 60, I think 60. But it was for us a very intense piece and very emotional. And we wanted to have this in the very end, which stands for her, you know, for her being an adult and grown up and having her own, just knowing where she is. And she decided for the music. And so this music really touched me when I heard it the first time, Fantasy. Actually, our producer found it in the film. And then we knew that it really has to be in the film. Yeah, so this is the end of the film.
Let me try to ask a question about politics, because it is a film on the surface, it's not very political. Under the surface, as I think it is, you're telling a story about, let's say, the unseen in the age of seeing, in the age of empiricism, of science, where rationality started to rule, and rationality and critique was fighting the church, was fighting, yes, of course, the power as well, which were using a lot of irrational ideas to rule. And the story you are telling is a story which is, in a way, you might say, defending the non-rational or the hyper-rational. I don't know how to put it, but you are telling that there is more than what we can see, I guess, in your film. So I'd like to know Katarina Lesitaris as well, your opinion about the role of enlightenment and the role of this debate now, because you're making the film in our time when we are talking about fake news, when we are doubting the scene again, this what we can see, when we say it's all interpretation, there is nothing safe and sure. So one could argue that you are serving to this idea. One could.
For me, the Enlightenment was very interesting in those, what I said before, about the value, how are we defining in a society the value of a human being? Is it the bourgeois idea of the achievement, where we live now, in neoliberalism? Or is it birth? Or is it, where is the... I think this is a question which is very political. And the other point for me was the audience. I mean, I think it's very difficult to make a film about a blind person. And for me, the only possibility was through the audience, because you always have the audience there. And it's all about being seen by the audience and being judged by the audience. But the object of the glance can't see. She can't look back. For a short time, she can do. But in the end, she comes back into this being judged of an audience. So those were those two of the big things that were important for me, and I think are important for nowadays. And I mean, sure, with the Enlightenment, a lot of, also before with rationalism, a lot of, it was the root of materialism and therefore capitalism and communism and all this ideas, so it's the root of a lot of those things, and therefore it's important. And maybe for myself, deep down, it's really a little bit true. Not that point about the fake news, but the point about, I think with rationalism you can't explain the value of a person. This little handicapped boy, he's no value for somebody. There is no profit you can make out of him. And therefore, also that Zwelverin asks, I think God, I don't believe in, I mean, I'm not religious, yeah? But God, she hopes, because she's nobody, and she hopes that God doesn't love you for your achievement. And I hope that too. If there is a God, I hope that he doesn't love us for our money, for our achievement, or for our birth, or you know what I mean? That's political for me too.
It would be a very interesting discussion, but I think very long and very interesting. We have to continue somewhere else.
Una última pregunta. One final question.
One question to the music again. Did she really play Bach? Because I think Bach was quite forgotten at that time.
Yeah, but it was wiederentdeckt. He was rediscovered. He was rediscovered by Van Swieten in Vienna. So she played Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach. He was really modern at the time. But the old Bach, he was... To be honest, I think it was 3 or 4 years after 1777, it was in the beginning of the 80s, that he was rediscovered by Van Swieten in Vienna. But he was. So it was this the beginning of Bach being a famous composer. If Van Swieten wouldn't have brought him to Vienna, no one would ever have heard the old Bach again.
And she heard it. There's also something that she heard it in the salon, in the music salon of Van Swieten, and also Mozart liked it. You know, it was like nowadays. It wasn't fashionable, but real experts. That's what I read. So. Mm. I'm not a musician.
And I'm happy that they rediscovered it.
Okay, we've got to finish because you've got a tight agenda. Thank you very much to everyone, and congratulations for the film, and best of luck in your premiere and the rest of the career with the film. Thank you.